The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies. Feline with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Only thing that'll last.
So we started talking about this Texans offseason asking for one thing. Like, this show asked for one thing as far as the Texans were concerned when it came to addressing needs. Pay for competency when it came to the offensive line. We didn't trust Nick Caserio to draft. History suggests if he depended on his own, I guess his scouts' evaluation of players from the college ranks and seeing how that would translate to the NFL, it would be a failure. We'll see about Urs Reed, but so far, not so good when it comes to drafting offensive linemen. Paying for Braden Smith, paying for now Wyatt Teller, and bringing back Ed Ingram, if I had a want for an approach, this would be it. Mid-level guys you're paying for, you're not breaking the bank, so you can stretch that money over three guys. And now what you have is competency. And that's as far as I'll go. I'm not going to celebrate the fact that Wyatt Teller was an All-Pro now 5 years ago. I went through the list this morning just to see who else was an All-Pro. Some guys who are no longer playing. Others who have fallen off from that All-Pro status. He made an All-Pro team. He was a second team All Pro in 2021. Last time he was a Pro Bowler was 2023. So I'm not rising to the level of this will be a great offensive line. I think they'll be competent. And that's what's needed. At least to start when you are plugging and placing guys who aren't really long term solutions. That's why you're signing these guys to 2 year deals. Of course, Ed Ingram returns after his surprisingly good play in 2025. So there it is. I guess the question will be, will they try to find a long-term solution at one of the spots in the draft? A guy who doesn't have to play immediately, maybe becomes a swing interior player if you draft a guy who can play center and guard. But either way, as it stands now, if they don't find someone to replace Jake Andrews, it feels like they're set and they can approach the draft in a way that Nick Caserio always tells us he's doing it, but he's not really doing it with best player available in mind. So if you missed the news, Wyatt Teller is a Texan. The former Brown signs a 2-year deal with the Texans. And he comes over from a Browns team who did some revamping of their own with their offensive line. Of course, Tytus Howard is now there. They made some other moves this offseason because they weren't happy with their line. And that leads to the question, how good could Wyatt Teller be if he was still available at this time? That's the give and take. You get a guy you've heard of. You get a guy who's played well in his career. But as it stands now, his best years are a couple years ago, and maybe the play is declining. Look, PFF isn't the be-all and all. People will tell you that all the time. But it's one metric I can use to kind of explain, when we're talking about O-line play, how beauty is kind of in the eye of the beholder. Sean, Wyatt Teller is a Texan. If you look at his PFF ranking, it has him as one of the an average guard. He finished, when you compare or combine pass block and run block, he finished the 40th best guard in football. So right smack average for qualifying guards.
Texans, great.
Yes, 62.2. That was his grade. He's an average guard last year. You want to guess what Laken Tomlinson's grade was last year? Or in 2024, when the Texans signed him?
Was it also like 64?
It was 62.7. So if we just go by what PFF had them graded, as far as week by week, Laken Tomlinson was a better graded out guard than Wyatt Teller, a guy the Texans didn't even want to start at the end of the year and are glad to be rid of, I guess. Now, when you start to actually look at the rankings, Laken Tomlinson was about the 60-something ranked guard, so he was lower as far as qualifying guards, but his block grade was higher. And once again, that's just PFF, and they get criticized. And, of course, any O-line coach or any O-lineman who has a problem with their ranking will tell you they don't know what the assignment was. They didn't know what was asked for, so that's all part of the calculus when you try to figure out how you feel about this. But you get a guy who has been really good in the past. The question is, how good can he be for the next couple years with the Texans? Pass block grade, worse than his run block grade. He was not a good pass blocker, a better run blocker. So that fits with this narrative that's developing and what Nick Caley certainly has said, that the Texans want to lean into an identity of being a big-time running team. You couple that with the defense. You hope that helps limit some of the mistakes we've seen from C.J. Stroud. Does it mean that he will be less influential in how things are done, C.J. Stroud is, as far as his impact? Maybe. Maybe they're going to lean away from C.J., and they're going to hope this run game is what carries them along with their defense, and C.J. can be there, limit his mistakes, and become a super game manager. I don't know. It's not a title he would prefer, but maybe that's the way the Texans are going with these guys they believe can help them in the run game going forward. So Wyatt Teller, your newest Texan, the offensive line upgraded, we hope, through free agency. The question is it good enough? And my big question beyond is it good enough, I think it's good enough to be average. But is that good enough to get you to where you want to go? My biggest question is, beyond that, do the Texans have anyone beyond Nico who's an explosive playmaker? Are they still devoid of those guys? Because the offensive line is cool. You like David Montgomery. You hopefully with less tread on his tires, because Jahmyr Gibbs and his emergence in Detroit the last couple seasons, that David Montgomery can be a guy you lean on along Woody Marks to help your run game, which was putrid last year. But you still need guys to make explosive plays. And as it stands now, Nico Collins is your only proven commodity. Tank Dell would be there. People are watching Tank Dell in training during the offseason and seeing that he looks better than maybe even they thought. The question will be is, once he's out on the field and actually playing football, is all the burst and juice we saw from him a couple seasons ago there when contact is in question? But so far, it looks like so good for Tank Dell in his recovery. So if he's that guy, then yes, I think at least you have two guys who you can look at and go, they can turn a small play into a touchdown, or at least explosive plays. They've drafted receivers recently, and of course, they've invested in the running back room. So I don't know that that'll be a priority in this draft. But I'd like at least one more guy I can count on and go, okay, when that guy's out on the field, that could be an explosive play anytime. Maybe that'll be Jalen Knoll in his second season, or Jaden Higgins, who is at least, it looks like those two, along with Nico, your top three receivers. So making moves that kind of fit what we're hoping for. So we'll take it. It's better than the alternative of hoping for the draft to come through.
Yeah. And so, they did all this and add Reed Blankenship.
You add to your defense, you get better at really one of the safety spots.
Yeah, the one spot on your defense where you're like, hey, this guy isn't a mutant playing football. It's like, oh, this is just a normal, you know, MJ Stewart football player. It's like, no, now it's, I mean, probably still not a mutant, but at least, yeah, Reed Blankenship. I know that guy. He's been on good defenses before.
Yeah.
He's been the eighth best player on a great defense.
He has not been a weak link on a very good defense. You'll take that, and he certainly can make plays. So you'll take that as the other guy in your secondary, a guy who was a starter on recently on a Super Bowl team and a defense that had Vic Fangio coordinating it. You know that guy knows defense, so you'll welcome Reed Blankenship to the mix.
It will make the draft interesting because there really isn't like a glaring hole like we or at least I've said just. Yeah, I'd still like an offensive lineman the first two rounds or three rounds, you know, just to get some high-level talent, not just depending on veteran stop gaps of a guy that, hey, he doesn't have to play immediately. You can develop him and maybe, you know, the blind squirrel finds a nut this time and you draft a good offensive lineman. That'd be awesome. But besides that, it's like, you know, tight end maybe. Just to be like a backup tight end for Dalton Schultz's succession plan. Like, it's not really like anything. I know defense, it's just like, do you tackle, I guess? If not, I kind of trust what they got cooking on that side of the ball.
It's hard to see them being able to, at least in the spot that they're drafting in the first round, drafting an elite linebacker. Of course, those guys can pop up where they don't need to be drafted high. It's just, if you're right on a guy, you're right. But if you could find yourself a plus player at defensive tackle instead of what they do is where they get guys who fit, but they're short-termers. They brought back Sheldon Rankin, so that's nice. But can they find someone, I don't want to say fit the timeline, but fit the profile of what they've done on defense where they drafted really good players?
Yeah.
Can they find a really good defensive tackle or really good linebacker in the second round or the bottom of the first round to give you another young player along with all the other very good young players on your defense?
Yeah, like the Kamari Laster of inside linebackers.
Yeah,
like
can you find one of those guys?
Yeah,
and maybe you make Azeez Ashayer, maybe not expendable, but not someone you're desperate to keep if you decide after, what, now year three to move on.
Yeah, at the very least, improve off the Toa Toa spot.
Right? Yeah, if it comes down to that. Henry Toto
certainly made by running backs don't become
a problem. That certainly was a problem. He's probably played better than we thought.
He's been solid.
Yeah, but if it comes down to it, you want a guy waiting in the wings to replace him. Maybe you find that in this draft, or maybe they're so good when you draft them that he overtakes Toto. It's not a bad thing to go draft a player who just wins a job from an established starter outright.
That's really the thing. It's like there's not a starter that you're like, oh my god, this guy has to not be the plan. You know, it's like no matter who they draft, like there's a good chance they just don't start week one and they have, you know, it's a longer term development, or you know, injury pushes them into thing, but there's not like they need to find a day one starter at XYZ. So that from that perspective, they did a good job, especially offensive line is like one of the spots they got their work early on, relatively early on. Considering the holes.
I guess the final thing regarding the line, like, are they going to be good? Or because they don't currently have a great player there. But they've had a great player in the past, and it didn't work out with Laramie Tunsil. So can, you want to call it culture, you want to call it all the guys working together to be a cohesive unit, whatever you want to project this offensive line to be, can they be good or the is the best we can hope for because of whether the talent level or even the youth when it comes to Ursary, Can we expect above average? Is that a reasonable expectation? Above average for this unit?
I'd still be okay with average.
Average.
Yeah. Because like you said, and you know, it's kind of two things happening at once where it's like they shouldn't really blow their load on a, you know, one high priced free agent at the same time. Unless you do that, you're not going to get a guy who is a proven track record of being awesome.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I'm convinced they have five NFL caliber offensive linemen on their roster now, where I was not convinced of that the last 2 years.
And then you have Evan Brown, who we haven't mentioned, who could be a player who injects himself. And if it's an interior position, it probably would be center. But you probably have six guys that you wouldn't mind starting.
And you can have them compete for the job, which that also helps. Where if one of these guys is, you know, a lemon or relatively disappointing or even just gets hurt in training camp, it's like, hey, you're not so dependent on Jake Andrews that, like, oh my God, now we're back to Jared Patterson hours. Like, it's a little bit more, okay, there's a steady hand, basically. There's an option for a steady hand at basically every position, I guess, except for left tackle, but that's Ariante Irsery, who's a rookie left tackle last year. That, again, the fact he's not a guy that we're like, oh my God, you need to replace him, is good enough.
Yeah, after year one, what just you that, got from him it, is enough positives that you can go, okay, maybe there's something to build here in year two. Considering he was a day two pick, but he wasn't at the top of a lot of people's boards as far as tackles are concerned, and you got starting caliber play. I mean, to a point where you weren't so concerned that he was out there, and that's good enough for. And sure, relatively speaking, compared to the rest of the offensive line, that plays a part. But when you get rookie left tackle play, where you don't immediately think we got to get him out of there,
that's good for every team in the league.
Yeah, that is fine. That is more than fine. We'll hope for an improvement in year two from him. So another offensive lineman in the mix. It feels like your starting unit is set. Maybe with center being a place where there's some flexibility, but as it stands now, we can say league average. We can say league average is what is a rightful way to place expectations on them. And if they supersede that or exceed it, much like Ed Ingram did, then even better. But they've done work here that at least is satisfying.
Are we in no excuses mode for CJ Stroud when it comes to pass protection, or when it comes to
we're a long way away from the season starting. All we got to do is watch Ed Ingram get blown up on a run, and we're right back. And some people will be right back to complaining and saying, "Hey, get CJ more help."
Yeah,
it's what it is. If you love your quarterback and you think the world's out to get him, you will find a way to defend him.
No excuses mode for Nick Caley, who finally got his run first identity.
I think Nick Caley is firmly in the tier of no excuses. They got what you wanted. They got you a power back.
Year two.
Yeah, year two. All the things that Slowick caught, Nick Caley will catch it if things don't progress. And that's just a business. Yeah. All right.
The difference might be that if Caley catches it, it will probably also be at the expense of some other important people, whether that's, you know, CJ, whether it's Caserio, whoever.
We'll see. I mean, Caserio currently getting applauded for what he's done.
Yeah.
If Caley can't coordinate this line and this offense into one that shows improvement over last year, I don't know that Caserio, at least from the people who don't matter, we'll see what the people inside the building say. I don't know that the people who don't matter, namely us and fans as far as determining jobs, if he catches it, I don't know that he would catch it from them. Look what he did. Unless you're just going to ignore all the praise you gave him during the offseason.
If it doesn't work, then
it's Nick Caley's fault. You can get blamed for hiring Nick Caley.
Offensive coordinators.
You can get blamed for hiring Nick Caley. I think that was where the blame would come.
That's just in general. I have a hard time believing that a team goes through two offensive coordinators and gets a third one without the quarterback, head coach, or GM catching it. Just someone else gets caught in the fire.
While I would agree with that, D'Amico as it stands now, pretty Teflon.
Yes.
Except people were upset he didn't pull CJ in that Patriots game. People were like, what are you doing? Why are you so devoted to him? Bring in Davis Mills. But other than that, there haven't been a lot of points where people are out on D'Amico.
Which also, that being the criticism, also leads you to like, well, maybe it's the quarterback that exits.
Yeah. While you brought up the fact that no excuses for CJ, I think that's for some people that they're there.
Yeah.
But for others, it will always be a thing where it's not his fault. Look how good he was year one. So it just depends on how you feel about him and where you stand, and maybe you've got undue loyalty because you're desperate for a quarterback of the future and a franchise quarterback. And I get that part, but if the guy's not the guy, it's not the guy. You got to move on. All right, we'll go to break with that. 713-780-3776 is the number. Got plenty of other stuff to get to. We had a thrilling tournament game. At least it came down to the wire. We also had the WBC, which we'll get into next. Certainly a prime example of the differing opinions on how to approach it. You had, before the game, Derek Jeter say some things which are in line with how Americans feel. And then you had after the game where the starting pitcher for Venezuela said something completely different to contradict what Derek Jeter said. We'll get to that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So I have to admit, I did not actually see the Bryce Harper homer live. I was out of the room when it happened. I saw a lot of the World Baseball Classic. I say I have to admit because we were talking about it this morning in a way, and we were trying to figure out, how do we feel? Do we feel bad that the U.S. didn't win? Do we feel okay Venezuela won? How do we feel considering all the conversations going into it and how most American fans feel about baseball and what they find most important? I got to admit, Aaron Judge and Bryce Harper not winning was more important to me than a U.S. team winning. That's where my hate lies. In baseball, my hate for the domestic league supersedes any patriotism I might have. Like for hockey, it's different. I don't have some long-standing hate against any American hockey players. I don't care who's an instigator. I don't care who has a history of cheap shots because I don't know for the most part. So I know Matthew Tkachuk is not well liked. He's kind of as if you're not rooting for the Panthers. He's a guy who starts stuff. The Panthers as a franchise, at least this current iteration of them, are a bunch of dudes. Throw in Brad Marchand. A bunch of guys who the general hockey world doesn't like. They're just that team. I don't have that in hockey. So I was like, you know what? I'm all in. Let the U.S. win. Screw Crosby. I don't want to see McDavid win. I'm good. All in. This one, the Yankee stuff, the Bryce Harper stuff, Aaron Judge, of course, the Yankee stuff, and Bryce Harper, I couldn't deal. I didn't want to see them happy. And apparently, Bryce Harper was in tears after the game, so whatever he said about it not being as important changed as the tournament went on. I couldn't feel bad about Venezuela winning. I tried to work it up and go, you know what, USA, USA, but at the end of the day, it's just a WBC to me. And judging by the reaction to the Venezuela team, and we got some Astro connections there. Omar Lopez is an Astro. He's a manager for Venezuela. Of course, Jose Altuve was right behind home plate as his country won. I can't feel bad, mostly because Harper and Judge lose again. That's all. That's all it is. I don't have really any problems with anyone else. I honestly don't have any problems with Judge and Harper. I just prefer that they don't win stuff.
Yeah,
that's all that is.
It folds into the MLB stuff.
Yeah,
it's a preseason.
Yeah, I just hope that they don't win anything.
MLB slander.
And if they're not going to win anything while wearing the U.S. colors, it's a little more complicated because I root for the U.S. to win in international tournaments. Not if Judge or Harper on the team, though.
Yeah. There's also a little bit of, like, this is such a, if this happened on a normal Tuesday night for an MLB team that is, you know, like the Dodgers, essentially, against a good team in Venezuela. So it would be like Dodgers, whatever, Brewers or Cubs or something, where you're just like, you know, just not your night. You know, yeah. Like you just went eight innings or almost eight entire innings without scoring. Like, you're just not going to win doing that.
And, and one of your star players came through big to tie it, but you had to go back out there.
Bats are cold tonight.
Yeah.
We'll get them tomorrow. Oh, wait, that was the final.
Yeah. Okay, so you guys go back to.
They're celebrating.
You go back to the job that most people care about in this country far more than the WBC, starting, I guess, today.
It's actually crazy that they're. Until Venezuela. Venezuela isn't like some huge underdog. It's not like if Italy won or something.
Sure.
It's crazy that the World Baseball Classic doesn't have like a ton of upset winners just because like we all know how baseball works. And it's like, yeah, just, you know, tonight wasn't the night for the DR. And so they lose to a team that they're way better than.
Yeah, particularly in these single elimination tournaments.
Yeah,
why does Japan fare so well?
Yeah, Japan DR won. What, more than half of these?
Yeah. In this case, we did get a bit of an upset as far as when we start to stack who should be winning these things. Looking at the rosters, Venezuela wouldn't be in the top three. Maybe not the top four. You throw in Puerto Rico. But they do get this one. And
with Altuve sidelined.
With one of their legends not playing because of insurance purposes. He wasn't the only one. There was another Venezuelan player who was watching the game from a residence. I don't know if it was his home or wherever he was staying because of a spring training. He watched it with his kids, but he couldn't play because of insurance either. So it wasn't a thing that just affected the Astros. So Venezuela probably, like a lot of teams, or at least some of the teams, didn't have their full complement because of insurance. But they get it done. And I mentioned before we went to break that it was on the Fox set before the game that Derek Jeter said this. And he said that the guys who say the World Baseball Classic is more important is because they never played in a World Series. Turns out the starting pitcher for Venezuela did play in the World Series, and here's what he had to say after winning.
Is that the greatest moment of your baseball career, what you were able to do on the mound tonight?
I mean, I'll tell you what, like, I win the World Series a couple years ago, and there's nothing that I can compare with this, you know. Like, this is the greatest moment I ever got on the mound pitching. Pitching like that in front of almost like our home crowd, you know, like the whole Venezuela was here. And I know our country back then, everybody was there too, you know. So I can't compare this moment to nothing. Be on the mound like that and have the whole crowd like on us all the time is just something that I can't even tell you how I feel right now.
So that was Eduardo Rodriguez. He was a Red Sox in 18, so he pitched in a World Series in 2018. At least he was on the team and is a world champion. And he certainly holds this, and you heard it. It's about the country and winning one for Venezuela and what that means. And that's just going to be the standard going forward. Maybe as we continue these, maybe there's a certain generation of U.S. baseball player who saw their country lose for the second consecutive World Baseball Classic. And in the final, that'll flip. Not that it'll be more important than the World Series, but there will be more care in the approach. Like, you won't have these comments about how it's not that big of a deal. Maybe we won't hear that. Maybe just for a sense of, hey, this is a tournament we're playing in. We're not going to approach it like it's not important. We're putting on the colors for the U.S. We're certainly going out there to try to win. I think it evolved over the tournament where you saw the U.S. players certainly not as emotional about things as the other teams they were playing, but they evolved and said, hey, this is fun. Let's go try to win this thing, as opposed to, you know, it's kind of an exhibition. We're out there. We'll try our best. Now, at least I hope that the next time around that it's approached differently, even though I will assume all the guys play hard, but we walk into it going, hey, this is a big deal. We want to go do this. I've seen some people say that if we should treat it like the NHL treated the Olympics, let's put it in the middle of the season while guys are ramped up. I don't know that baseball would be down for that, considering how safe they played it with, hey, certain number of pitches for my guys. If the game reaches a certain situation, then this pitcher can pitch. Like, for example, the Venezuela closer was only allowed to pitch if they're leading in the ninth. That was how that went. If it was any other scenario, he couldn't pitch. Now, Mark DeRosa was asked about Mason Miller. and why didn't you throw him in the game? And this is, he's probably simply a victim of his missteps before, but he says something along the lines of, well, we were only going to put him in when we were leading, and someone immediately jumped on him. What do you mean if you're leading? You're the home team. When was he ever going to be able to pitch when you were leading? Of course, it could have simply been top of the ninth.
Yeah.
But if they had been leading, but someone jumped on that immediately, and of course, it got a lot of likes. Mark DeRosa doesn't have any leeway to not explain fully what he's saying at all times now. But I thought it simply meant, hey, if we were leading in the bottom of the eighth going into the ninth, if maybe we pushed another run across after the Harbor home run, then I would have brought in Mason Miller. But yeah, it turned into stupid. You never would have had the opportunity because you're the home team.
Yeah, I read that the same way. I do think people being like, yeah, just put in July, like, I don't know if that would mean that, like, the Tigers are now just cool with Scooble going every fifth day.
I would imagine not.
85 pitches.
I would imagine not. Like, I don't think that changes anything.
I still, like,
I think they might be a little bit more apprehensive.
Yeah, I think they're more capable of going longer. You know, like, they just literally just built up to go longer in games. But I don't know if they would be allowed to do that. You know, like, I don't know. I do think that eventually, if USA just keeps losing, like, they will take it
losing
more
in
seriously.
Finals particularly. Yeah. They've been I don't know what the score was when Ohtani struck out Trout, but this is another close game or a final where they lose. Maybe there will be the next time around, hey, we're out to win it next time.
Yeah.
We will. Maybe the MLB teams don't change their philosophy on things, but the players who are cleared
that
to play
are there. Yeah.
will treat this like, hey, we're tired of losing this thing. Let's establish that we're the best baseball playing country in the world and go out and take one.
Yeah, because there's a level that the Latin American countries get that I don't actually think USA can get to with the celebration stuff, but that's more of like a baseball culture difference thing. Like, Japan also doesn't like flip their bats and stuff, but they take it very seriously.
Yes.
Like, there's no denying that, like, those guys care. I think it just has to come from either continued heartbreak or just like next year they don't get out of the group and it's like a full redeem team type situation. Because I was trying to think of, like, is it because the biggest domestic league is here that people are just like, whatever. Like,
I think it has to be.
But, like, I was thinking that's not the case for England in the World Cup for soccer.
It's true.
Like guys that are Man United fans are like, I'm glad the Man City guy blew it for England in the semifinals.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone is approaching it like I did, where it's like, I don't know if a man, you guys, like, trying to think of a Man City guy like John Stones. Yeah. I hope John Stones
Sterling choked.
Yeah, commits a foul in the penalty box for a game deciding penalty, and they're like, you know what? Screw John Stones. He plays for Man City. It's not that approach. And I will say my approach is likely not the.
You think
that's the way it is for a lot of people? Like, you play for the Yankees and you're Aaron Judge. I don't want you to win anything.
People are burying Aaron Judge.
Well, it's fun to bury Aaron Judge when he doesn't come through. I wasn't even rooting for Aaron Judge. I wasn't rooting against him in that sense. Like, I need you to strike out here. I just didn't want him to win. Like, he could have had a great he wasn't great in elimination games. That's the stat that's on, like, 2-for-11 throughout the WBC.
Yeah, people photoshopped him into James Harden.
Like, if he had a great tournament as far as elimination games, I still would have been thrilled that he didn't win. So I wasn't distinctly rooting for his failures in that regard. I just didn't want to see him win anything.
I think I saw a good amount of people being like, great, now I don't have to root for Aaron Judge anymore. Like, there's a lot of like good. I'm sick of these guys.
Yeah,
like,
I do.
I'm more comfortable hating them.
Yeah, but the Premier League is one of the best leagues in the world, and yet they put aside their distaste for their biggest rival to root them on in the World Cup.
That's why I'm like, I don't know what's different other than. There's only been like 7 World Baseball Classics. Like,
yeah, like, maybe we got it. Like, England's, they always talk about bringing it home, which is ridiculous as far as their World Cup chances. But they have had a drought for a long time, and at one point they were one of the. They're still a soccer power, but back in the '60s, they were one of the premier soccer playing countries in the world, and had, I think, won the World Cup in the mid '60s, I believe. So Maybe it's part of that. Maybe if it's 2040 or whatever the year would be, we still haven't won one. The lack of winning one will change our entire feelings about it. But as of now, it's like, huh, okay.
Yeah, it's just like it's in-season tournament-itis.
Probably.
Where it's just like, I remember life when this didn't exist.
We need history. We need a generation of people not to know what baseball was like without it.
Whereas like soccer, like, you know, the in-season tournament equivalent of like the FA Cup.
It's been around for over 100 years. Yeah.
The World Cup's been around for almost 100 years, right? It's like 30s it started. So some of it might just be like, most people watching this are just like, whatever.
Yeah,
like,
The FA Cup started in 1872. And the World Cup's not as long, but been around a long time. So the history of it all helps in terms of the importance. And we just need that. We need...
we didn't have light bulbs.
they still played soccer. And it meant something in that country. So
it did mean something.
So maybe
we used to build things.
Maybe 30 years from now, the WBC will be a thing that people care a lot about because it actually will mean, in some ways, the best baseball playing country in the world. But we're not there yet. No. I think most Americans still believe, even if they're wrong on this, that we're the best baseball playing country in the world.
I think that's what it boils down to.
Americans still believe,
yeah. And
it doesn't matter what happens in this tournament.
There's a level of like, Nolan McLean was starting.
We didn't even in a title deciding game, we threw out McLean. Didn't even think twice about it. Once it becomes a thing where positioning guys, so our best pitcher is pitching in that.
Could have just played.
Yeah. If once it gets to that point, then you know it's real. Until that point happens, maybe the American fan is right to treat it in the way we treated it. It didn't lead to us winning because the other countries treat it in a way that it means the world to them. And Venezuela wins, and they are the world champion. All right. Keith, we'll get to you when we come back. You want to talk some NFL. No breaking news, or maybe you will break it for us. Last time you called in, you broke the Jaylen Waddle news to us. Jaylen Waddle, a Bronco. We'll see what Keith has in store when we get back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Here's Del Olalea.
All right, let's get to Keith here. He wants to talk about the NFL. Keith, did you call as our main man, Keith, or is that an intern's editorializing? Because that's what it says up on the board.
No, this is Keith. This is main man Keith. I tried to get in on the morning show, but was stuck on hold for 30 minutes, which is really disappointing as a top three caller to the network. So that was frustrating. Well, my question is NFL related. Five teams have two first round picks: Jets, Dolphins, Chiefs, Cowboys, and the Dolphins. I believe missing one team, maybe. But which of those teams do you think has the most pressure to hit on both of those first round picks? You know, five teams, two first round picks is kind of crazy. Also, second question: will Brandon Ayuk ever play in the NFL again? Thanks.
So two questions. So the five teams with two first round picks are the Jets, Browns, Cowboys, Dolphins, and Chiefs. And then you got the Brandon Ayuk question. Which team has the most into needing to get these two first round picks right? Well, the Chiefs.
Like Chiefs are.
The Chiefs and the Cowboys, because no matter what you actually think of them, they're going to operate like they can go win.
Yeah.
Of course, Mahomes and him returning from the injury will play a giant part in that. But if you're the Chiefs, you've had a departure of talent, particularly in your secondary. Rashee Rice, that's still a thing. They need, if they believe this is another year where they can compete, they need to hit on a couple guys in the first round that can be great. And cost-controlled labor. The Cowboys are the same way. That's a team who always goes into the year thinking their expectations to reach, even if they're a very average team. The expectations, just because of who they are, is to be better than average. So I would throw the Cowboys in there. The Jets, Browns, and Dolphins, if you want to go in order. I think the Jets have more pressure because you have a coach who is at least in the second year of his tenure, and that's a team who became a bit of a joke. Aaron Glenn helped that this offseason by falling asleep during the combine. There are a lot of things that are wrong with the Jets. Now they spent money this offseason. So that's a team who needs to hit, even if you don't think they're a real contender for the playoffs. The Browns and the Dolphins kind of got a year plus because they're set to be rebuilding, particularly the Dolphins. The Browns,
this is they've like year made, zero.
Yeah, the Dolphins are in year zero, not even year one. The Browns, they have made moves. They did trade and pay Tytus Howard, so they believe they should be better. It is a first-year head coach. Who their quarterback's going to be, we don't know. But I do think there's more pressure on the Chiefs and the Cowboys to get those first two first-round picks right.
And I think the Jets have two first-rounders next year,
because of the trade with Sauce Gardner.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they have...
They might have three.
They have two this year from the one from... In fact, their picks are, of course, their own and the Colts, and then they have the same situation next year as well. So yeah. That's where their two are coming from.
Do they also have a Cowboys from next year? Or did they not get that in the Quinn and Williams trade?
Let me see, because the Jets hold the second pick overall and the 16th pick overall, which would be a Cowboys pick, right? Look at it right now. The Jets have the Colts pick at 16.
Yeah.
Maybe they have a Cowboys first rounder next year.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is.
And a Colts and their own.
Yeah. So maybe they have three next year and two this year.
Yeah.
So they built up enough of a war chest. Maybe next year is where they go in on quarterback. If they're better and they're in a spot where they can't get one of the top quarterbacks because they were
not good
in 2026, but better than...
They have the sixth pick, yeah.
Yeah, maybe they have the ammunition to move up a little bit to get whatever quarterback they're targeting. But the Jets, not a lot of pressure. Aaron Glenn's under pressure to put on a better product.
Yeah, but the falling asleep at the combine thing, come on. He got screwed by that.
Yeah, I'm sure it's happened before.
It's also just like guys are just running.
It's not that interesting.
The times matter, not really what they look like running.
Yeah, you don't need to see form. You just need to see the result.
There's coaches that don't even go to the combine. It's fine. Let them catch a couple
It's beats. Just unfortunate that the camera's on them.
He had a late night eating
shrimp cocktail.
Cocktail at whatever.
Whatever that restaurant is. Yes, we all know the combine stories. It's just not a great look for a guy who didn't have a great year.
No, that it is. I agree it's a bad look. But like, come on.
I'm not overreacting, really but presentation matters. And if anyone who is against you now has that in their arsenal, it's a problem for you. So
yeah.
he needs a better season coaching, even if the results aren't great. But when you're a defensive guy and your defense stinks, that's always going to be a problem.
Yeah, my window into Jets fandom is strictly through Jake Asman.
Sure.
He did not seem like a big Aaron Glenn guy throughout and after the season. I think even he was like, all right, he fell asleep at the combine, whatever. Like, that's not what I have a problem with. I have a problem with what he did on 17 Sundays last year.
Yeah, it's the least consequential thing that has happened in Aaron Glenn's tenure, the falling asleep at the combine. It's just another thing on the pile.
On one hand, you have Belichick eating popcorn, putting up the binoculars, like, oh, he's finding himself another lacrosse player that'll catch a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl. On the other hand, you have Aaron Glenn nodding off. Think it would have been better if he didn't wake up, if he didn't, like, catch himself, because he kind of, like, jerks up a little, like, oh, got to lean forward.
I think that leads to more memes, I think.
Yeah. But if you just would have been chilling.
And can you look cool waking up when you're not supposed to be asleep? Like, if he had looked cool getting up, like, well, he was non-concerned about the environment.
Yeah, there's also some plausible deniability that, like, maybe he was just looking down at something, you know, like, looking at the paper.
But much like the couple at the Coldplay concert, it's hard to play it off when you get caught. Like, if he was nodding off and he then grabbed the paper, and people are like, oh, he was just looking down. But instead,
rearrange something.
Nah, you can't play it off. We're all great at it when we have hindsight. Mm-hmm. Instead, he was in the moment and couldn't get it done.
Yeah. I would have never gotten caught if I was the Coldplay people.
See? This is what I'm saying.
Whatever. Almost a year later, yeah, I still feel like.
It's like, hey, it wouldn't have been me. And if I did see the camera on me, I wouldn't have been. I wouldn't have made it like I was cheating.
Yeah.
I would have handled it perfectly.
I would have. I've thought about it. I would have handled it perfectly.
Here's the first way you handle it perfectly.
Not go?
That's the first way, particularly in the story she told where, well, it's just the beginning of things. Then maybe keep that at home. Do that in the privacy of your own home. You can hang out at Coldplay without being butt to groin. I've seen it at concerts before.
Yeah, it's very easy.
Even couples who are actual couples find a way at times not to be in that position. So Chris Martin can point it out. All right, we'll go to break with that. Thanks for the call, Keith. What else did he ask about? Did he get into?
Oh, Brandon Ayuk. Yes. Is he ever going to play football
again? I mean, George Kittle was asked about it. He sat down for an interview and he said he talked to John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan about it. Not extensively, he was trying to get an update on Brandon Ayuk, and he kind of laid out what happened last year where Ayuk was at camp, and then once it got to a point where he wasn't going to play, he saw him a couple times in the weight room, but like never in the locker room, and Ayuk reached out to him when he got hurt, when Kittle got hurt, but other than that, it seems very confusing what's going on there. And, of course, there are some questions about his mental health. Will he play again? Probably not for the 49ers. If he does play, it'll certainly be someplace else, and we'll see what team, possibly the Commanders, they've been certainly mentioned for a while now, take a chance on him. The Brandon Ayuk thing is one that, because he's out of sight, out of mind, doesn't play for the team in this city, is maybe even more mysterious than the Joe Mixon one. At least we know that's an injury. The Brandon Ayuk thing has multiple levels to it. Will we ever find out if Joe Mixon had a like debilitating injury, or was it something embarrassing? Was it a weight on the foot? Who knows? Will we ever find out the extent of the injury? But San Francisco's had their own mystery for a guy who's supposed to help them make a Super Bowl, and even with his absence, they certainly made the playoffs. All right, we'll go to break with that. Hour one complete. Hour two when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us. No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.